Hey, welcome to episode 17 of the Going Deeper podcast. My name is Robbie. I'm your host. Guys, I cannot believe we're on episode 17 already.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That is moving along. So joining with me today is Jeff.
Good morning.
And JD.
Hey.
I switched it up there. I saw that there was a pause. You couldn't see it.
Caught me off
obviously
guard.
Because you're listening. Yeah, there was a pause for that. And we're missing Wayne today, but I'm sure he's doing well. Well, hey.
I'm leaving. Wayne's not here. I'm done.
You're done. Yeah, we can't go on. Yeah.
I have no intention of doing this podcast. I'm going to sit here and say nothing. Silent protest.
It's going to be the shortest podcast ever, and there will be no complaints. Yeah. And so that's what, who was it told me once when I first started like teaching and preaching? They said, no one ever complained about a short sermon. You know, you're worried about filling the time. Like, get in and get out. It's fine. Yeah. You know? So we'll see. We'll see if that applies to podcasts. But we are wrapping up a series about four text messages that God didn't send. And part four this past Sunday. And if you haven't listened to it, I'm going to encourage you to go back and listen to this one or the whole series and really see this. And this one is, it doesn't matter what I do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. And this idea that, and Jeff, I think you put it well, that this is like the number one American value now. I think it's a Western civilized value. If I can do what I want as long as it doesn't hurt anybody.
Sure. And I think part of that stems from the fact that we emphasize individual freedom so much in American culture. Individual freedom, individual rights, and those words get thrown around a lot. And I think this just plays off of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we really get down to it, we like to think that what I'm doing doesn't hurt anybody, but really, who's the determiner of that? Mm-hmm. Of what hurt somebody and what didn't? I think, you know, Jeff, I do have a little bit of a bone to pick, and I brought it up before we were recording. You used an example. They said, if you're a youth pastor here, which my ears perk up, and you have the sin of gluttony, which offended right there. You know, no one's going to say anything, which is interesting, right? Because we have like carry-in dinners.
Oh,
and
man.
We're just like, you know, and the little old ladies who love you are just like, you should eat more. And just piling it on, right? And then you go down and you finish and somebody's like, are you gaining some weight? You look like, and I'm like, oh, thanks. Appreciate that. But then the second example you give that I wouldn't be fired for gluttony. Like, good to know. Was that if I smoke dope with a student, I'd be let go immediately. I'm glad to know. I just want to clarify for our listeners that has not ever happened, nor will it ever happen.
We have no evidence of that.
Not even evidence. It never happened.
There's no concern of it happening either.
I feel like I'm squashing rumors lately. Like, like there's a fine line between joking and it didn't happen. Let me just be clear. So,
I'm not insinuating that it's a fine line. In fact, I'm insinuating that it's a heaven and hell chasm between it did not happen and this is what we talked about.
Yeah. It did not happen. Never did. Never will. Yeah. I think it's just interesting. And you threw yourself in, to be fair, afterwards. You know, you did throw your. I just think you threw yourself in afterwards because you realized you were digging a hole, and you said, you know, I better throw myself in there, so you know, as to not offend.
Yeah. We're both looking up at the bus at that moment, right?
Yeah. It was just hitting us dead on. Yeah.
So, I'm just really glad I was left out of this.
Yeah. If you're, you know, I don't know, hypothetical. Operations administrator.
Hey, we could come up with something. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not. I think we have things to accomplish, right, Robbie?
No, I have no other notes for today. We can just talk about JD's sin. Hypothetical air quotes.
Hypothetical sin. Yeah.
No, but I think you made a good point, Jeff, that this idea that if, you know, we think that we're not hurting anybody in this, and we tend to say, well, and we can look and go, well, I know a guy that's a way worse sinner than I am. And we can justify that by just looking around. But if that's our, like, litmus test, we've missed it. I mean, because you quoted the verse of, we've all fallen short of God's glorious standard. We've missed it already if we're looking to somebody else. No, the standard isn't somebody else's sin. The standard is Christ and his example. to which I've had a friend before, and I don't know what you guys think about this. Like, say, oh, what's the point of even trying? Like, they're a Christian, and they said, what's the point of even trying? It's so it's so far out there. How would I ever achieve that?
Yeah.
What would you say to somebody who said that?
Well, what jumps out at me, and Dad made the point that we have really traded the conversation about holiness for the conversation about individual rights. Like, I have a right to do this, I have a right to do that. And in American culture, in many cases, you do. Like, there's a whole lot of freedom to be had living in this culture. Whereas in other cultures around the world, you don't quite have that same level of freedom. But what we have traded that for is holiness. And the Bible, Dad made the comment earlier in the series, and it's a discussion that is really important, that God's highest pursuit for us is not our happiness, but our holiness. And a lot of times the whole conversation about, well, I have the right to do this, or it's okay to do this as long as I'm not hurting anybody, is really a pursuit of our own happiness. And God is not nearly as interested in our happiness as our holiness. And so what I would say to that friend, you know, who is like coming to me going, well, why even try? Why even pursue holiness? Why even pursue Jesus? Because he's the perfection. He's the example that's way out there that I could never attain. Yeah. That's true. But it's like anything else. Do you want a relationship with him? And if you want a relationship with him, you'll gradually get closer to him. Now, you'll never be him. You'll never have that level of perfection. But if you want that relationship, then in that relationship, he will grow you closer, and he will pull you closer, and he will shine that light on you that allows you to see the areas of your life and your thoughts and your works and your actions and your deeds that are mistaken or messed up. But for me, it's really, what do you want? I mean, do you want to just do whatever you want to do, or do you want Jesus? Because you can't have both.
I think one aspect of this is you have to decide what really has value. And if Jesus is the most valuable thing that has ever been or ever will be, then why wouldn't you want to pursue that as opposed to something less? Granted, you're never going to become perfect, but you're pursuing the most valuable person who's ever walked the face of the earth.
Yeah. It's like that parable of the hidden treasure, right? Or the pearl, you know, the great price. You know, those parables point to, this is the most important thing. Sell everything else, but get this. And that's really the point that. When we are doing life, it's not really just doing life to do life for ourselves. We are doing life because we are in pursuit of Christ, and that's really what it has to be.
Yeah, it's almost the cliche, shoot for the stars and land in the clouds. You know, we're gonna aim for Christ's holiness and realize too that this is Him bringing us there. We can't do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know, sometimes, and maybe you guys are with me, sometimes I feel a little bit, we live in a post-sin culture, right? It's not sin. It's my individuality, right?
Yeah.
And so sometimes I feel a little bit like the little boy in the emperor's new clothes, right? And we're just going, he's naked, you know? And if you don't know that story, the emperor, you know, gets conned into having new clothes, but really it's not new clothes. He's just walking around naked, and everybody's like praising how great he looks.
Yeah.
And I think that's, we've just kind of been stripped down in culture, and I just feel a little bit, as Bible-believing Christians, a Jesus follower, that I'm just going, there's nothing there that what you're toting as being so great. It's all hollow. You know, in the end, it and that's that God gave them over to it, of Romans 1. It's just, sometimes it's just natural consequences of sin. God didn't have to, like, bring down a hammer of justice on them. He will eventually, we know that, but it's just the natural consequences of, if you sleep around on your spouse, like, you're going to wreck your marriage. Right? Yeah. I mean, there's things like that. If you start using substances, eventually they will destroy you. They will take more than you ever planned on giving.
Yep.
Exactly. I think I would say this. Shoot for the stars, land in heaven. Not a bad deal.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. Yeah. I think we run the risk of something I talk a lot about, is the temptation and moral formation, and that we can actually think that as long as I'm moral, and again, we kind of talked about this earlier, as long as I'm better than the next guy. And so as long as, man, I went to church, I'm there every Sunday. Oh, I serve on multiple teams. I'm reading my Bible every day. And somehow we think that that puts us at a better level on God's eyes. And none of that does. And that we're saved by grace, and actually we're being formed by grace. And it's His Spirit forming us over time. And we can actually use the spiritual disciplines, prayer, tithing, generosity, Bible reading, things like that, we can actually use those as a way to cover. That way, don't have to face my own sinfulness because I'm so good at what I'm doing over here.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a neat phrase, the temptation of moral formation.
It's not mine, yeah.
Well, I hadn't heard that before, but I think that's very good.
Yeah.
Because I think you can get there. You can get to the point where what I do is what really saves me. And that's where you go with that thought process. And Christ saves us and cleanses us, and that's why I think it's important for us to always be trying to be open to that formation that He's doing in us. But we have to recognize and we have to walk in the light so that those imperfections get exposed.
So how do we do that? How do we walk in the light more and more? How do we look like Jesus more and more? If we know, hey, it's not a power of my flesh that I'm doing this, it's a power of the Spirit, I can't coerce God to do it. So how do I open myself to what He's trying to do, to walk in the light?
I think there's a number of things that you can do that really, it starts with an attitude, I think. It starts with the right attitude of wanting Christ to be the most important thing in your life and desiring, seeking Him as that most important thing. Because that in and of itself changes what you do, right? When you have the attitude of, wow, I want to seek Jesus every single day, then it's not, I'm doing my Bible reading to check off the box because I want to do that. It's I'm doing the Bible reading because in there, I know that God is going to speak to me, and He's going to give me clarity about how to live my life, and He's going to confront me, He's going to challenge me, He's going to comfort me, He's going to push me. So in that, we have that experience that you know, our actions become actions that we can then that we do as a result of that relationship, as opposed to trying to secure the relationship or trying to prove to God I'm good enough. No, I'm just simply seeking Him because that's the most important thing. That attitude up front is really, really critical, and then it changes the way you do all the things that you do. And part of what we talked about before we turned the mics on was the whole aspect of confession. Part of living in the light is allowing the scriptures and allowing other people in your lives and allowing those folks that are closest to you, and the situations that you end up in to point out your flaws and to point out those things. And instead of rejecting them, instead of arguing against them, instead of looking at God and saying, no, I'm not going to believe that about myself, or no, that's just not true, or no, I don't sin like that. Simply saying, listen, yeah, okay, I see that in me. All right, God, help me work that out. I think, and maybe talking to a trusted person about that sin so they can kind of hold you accountable is a really important thing.
I think that it has to begin with an openness. You know, David, I believe it was in Psalm 139 said, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Well, when you approach God with that attitude, search me. Okay, point it out, whatever it is. When you approach God with that attitude, it will become clear. The Holy Spirit works in us, and we feel those taps on the shoulder, those things come into our mind. Wait a minute, what are you thinking? Or why did you say that? And if we allow those things to form us, then I think we're being open to God's voice, and it will change us.
Yeah, and Psalm 138's, I was going to say great, but you realize right before he asked God to search his heart and see if there's any way, wicked way in him, he asked God to kill a guy. It's like the most honest prayer you could possibly get. And he's like, and he justifies it. God, don't you despise people who don't like you? Mm-hmm. You know, so just be on with them, right? Take like, wouldn't that convenient? God doesn't like people that I don't like. You know, and but I think that prayer is in there specifically to show us how to pray. Mm-hmm. And to show honest prayers. And I think sometimes we're so busy being good that we don't have time to be honest before God. Because mm-hmm. we think, God, thank you for saving me. I'll take it from here. And that's not Christian formation. That's some other cultic Christianity and some other world religions that would say you have to worry about forming yourself in mm-hmm. the power of yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is where it gets so dangerous of some of this, you know, prosperity gospels and things like that, you know, happy, healthy, wealthy. And we can just, we just have to try harder. It's the try harder gospel mm-hmm. and we miss it.
Just have more faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Just have more faith. Why don't you have more faith on that? So there's an element of confession. There's an element of openness to it. I would say we kind of talked about this before, the element of humility about that. And you mentioned that on Sunday morning, that this idea of as I get closer to Christ, it should be causing me to be more humble. Mm-hmm. And I just don't get it. Like these guys that, you know, especially the ones that have big platforms, and I've had a chance to meet some, you know, fairly famous Christians, rock star Christians. You hate to say that, mm-hmm. but, you know, and some of them just end up being jerks. And I met some actual rock star Christians, musicians, and they're just jerks. And everybody's like, oh, I love their music. I'm like, I can't even listen to it anymore. Mm. You know, just cause the humility's not there. If I'm going to follow after Christ, the goal is to end up looking like Christ, mm-hmm. not just a better version of me. I got myself into this mess. I don't need to look better. You know, like, yeah. I need Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I do think that's something that is we're so prone to. We're so prone to thinking better of ourselves than we ought. And that's a challenge that we have to meet by honestly examining ourselves. That's why that confession is so important. That's why putting yourself in the light of Scripture is so important. That's why prayer is so important, because when you actually stop to pray, you actually have to think about the fact that you're standing in the presence of the God who created everything and who literally, like Ananias and Sapphira, could command that you die right now, and you would. Like there, I mean, when you actually think about what it is that we do as Christians when we step into the room to pray, or when we, you know, sit down with a journal and we begin to write out a prayer to God, we're talking to the sustaining force of our lives at that moment. It's really unwise to fake that. It really is. And so for us, I think it is so critical to continually allow that relationship with Christ through things like spiritual disciplines and through things like, you know, confession and stuff like that. But to allow Christ to continue to challenge and grow us and change us, because that has got to be the number one pursuit. Because if it isn't, then sooner or later we'll end up finding out that we're pursuing a false religion.
Yeah. So we had a few questions about Ananias and Sapphira and JD brought that up there. So you have the early church being led by, you know, the apostles that follow Jesus, and Peter, you know, kind of at the helm, and everybody's selling, you know, off their property and land and possessions and then giving it to church. And so no one went without. And then you have an interesting couple, Ananias and Sapphira, husband and wife, who decide they're going to sell their property too. And then they give the money to the church. Sounds great. Mm-hmm. But apparently we're told that they didn't give all the money, yet said they gave all the money, which then resulted in Peter questioning them, functioning almost in a prophetic way. He knew what mm-hmm. was going on. And Ananias drops dead. The young man, can you imagine being those young men who said, carried his body out? Like, oh, wasn't expecting this today. Yeah. Like, this is not what I signed up for. And they carry him out. And then his wife, Sapphira, comes in, asks the same question, and she drops dead. why so harsh? I mean, that seems like a really harsh way for God to handle things. Why do you think he did that? And obviously, we can only speculate because Scripture doesn't tell us. So,
right.
Well, you know what? This is not some scholarly opinion. I want to make that clear up front. Like, I've not studied this in depth. I've not looked at all the Greek. But there are some interesting things about the Bible when you start paying close attention to what God is doing that kind of pop out at you. In the Old Testament, right? He gives the people of Israel at Mount Sinai these rules and laws for how to live. One of the most important of which, honor the Sabbath. You know, take a time of rest and focus on me and focus on recuperating and then work the rest of the week and then take another break and all that kind of stuff. And there's this guy that decides on the Sabbath, well, heck with that. I'm going to go pick up some sticks. Literally, he's gathering sticks out in the wilderness and Moses is commanded, take him out. So they stoned the guy to death. And I had a friend of mine that lives down the street from me. You know, we were talking about the Bible one day. He's like, I don't understand that. You know, reading through the book of Numbers, why on earth? He's picking up sticks. What's the big deal? You know, so we got that guy. Then we the people of Israel enter the promised land and they're told, they take out Jericho. Don't take anything from the city. It's all for God. Like, don't touch any of it. This guy Achan takes a bunch of stuff and hides it in his tent, and him and his family get killed for it. And then you buzz forward to the New Testament, you got Ananias and Sapphira. It's the beginning of the brand new church. And so Ananias and Sapphira, you know, fake, you know, humble generosity and die for it. And it's just popped out at me. And again, I could be wrong, and there could be, you know, somebody way smarter than me that goes, no, JD, you're mistaken. But there are a number of stories that happened throughout the Bible at the inception of some new work of God, the formation of the people of Israel, the entrance into the promised land, the beginning of the church. And God takes those beginnings very seriously. And there are times when people are engaged in willful sin. They knew it was bad, they knew it was wrong, and they did it anyway. That he will initiate some pretty intense consequences for those folks. In my opinion, it's almost as if it's a warning to everybody else. Because one of the interesting things at the end of the Ananias and Sapphira story is like, and everybody was terrified. Well, sure. Right? So if I sin, even, you know, kind of a lie of omission, so to speak, right? I could drop dead. A, I'm playing with a really powerful God. B, I better not jack with this thing that he started, and I better pay attention. And so, to me, there's a little bit of a God protecting this new work of his hands thing going on with some of these stories. And so I think the point for us is we have to be really humble and really careful when we're engaging in willful, we're thinking about engaging in willful sin, that we don't presume that God is going to just let the consequences be free and easy for us. That especially if we're invested and involved in some work of God, we need to take that matter very seriously, because he certainly does. And there have been people that have met their end very swiftly and very difficult ways as a result of messing with something that God is trying to do.
Well, you think about the example for, like the man who picked up sticks, or Achan, Ananias and Sapphira. Any one of these people were setting an example for others. I mean, God lays down this law and says, don't do this on the Sabbath. And here we have a guy out there doing it. If nothing happens, what's that say to the entire Israelite community?
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. What God said doesn't matter. Or God isn't powerful enough to do anything about it. Same thing with Achan. I'm sure his entire family, because it said he took this stuff into their tent and hid it under the floor of the tent. Well, I'm sure his entire family knew it. Apparently didn't say anything. And there are consequences that go with that, because he set an example for his family. And so the same thing with Ananias and Sapphira. Lies have a way of coming out ultimately they come to light. And if nothing happened to them, and it was it became obvious that they had lied, and perhaps everybody thought they were great stuff. Maybe they gained some kind of position or power in the church because they were perceived as generous people. At some point, that's going to come out, and then what damage has been done to the church family?
Yeah, and I mean, makes you really not. I guess I know a bunch of Christians. Of, oh God, we want a new work. I'm like, oh, no, don't.
Yeah, so, be careful.
The stakes just went up.
Yeah, the stakes go up on that. Yeah,
they do. I mean, and it's one of those things where I think Dad points out a really important facet of this is that our example really is everything, and people are looking at us. And no, God may not strike you dead for that thing that you willfully intended to do today, whether it was an ill-spoken word or you made some horrible mistake within your marriage or workplace or family life or whatever. God may not strike you dead. In fact, the vast majority of us make it through the day having sinned, right? I mean, it's just the truth. But it's a really dangerous thing to almost tell God, what are you going to do about it? And that's a very dangerous place to be. It sets you up to be God in a lot of ways. And to some degree or another, Ananias and Sapphira felt like they had the right to keep that money and get the adulation for having done something good. And Peter points out to them, you could have kept some of the money, said we're giving some of the money, and they would have gotten the thanks and praise for whatever they had given. They certainly would have gotten that, but they kind of greedily wanted more. They wanted to look better than they were. And Peter said there wouldn't have been any consequence for you at all had you simply just given whatever money you felt like giving and saying, this is a third of the price, or this is half of the price, or this is three quarters of the price. But, we got some things we're going to take care of, so we're only going to give that much. Okay. That's still more than we had. But the minute they tried to sell it off as something more important than it was, they stepped into a situation where they were trying to be better than they were, or look better than they were, so to speak. And there's no place for that.
You think about it, they had the right to the money.
Yeah.
It was their land. It was and as far as we know, they came into that land honestly, so they had a right to the money. What they didn't have a right to do was to deceive the church. Mm-hmm. That they didn't have a right to do, and God dealt with it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think we need to also be careful not to think that God's silence towards our sin is His condoning it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Just because you haven't gotten caught, confronted, whatever, doesn't mean that He's condoning that. Or that He's okay with it. And we can think like, oh man, I got the promotion at work. Like, oh, it must be okay that I'm sleeping around on my wife. Like, no, that you're missing it, right? That yes, blessings can come from God, but sometimes just natural causes of life, way God's orchestrated the world, those things come about. And so we can think like, well, if I was, if God really had a problem with it, then I'd be struggling financially. Or, it's the opposite of the prosperity gospel. It's the downside where if I'm in sin. And that, I do believe, sometimes happens, but not always. That if I'm sinning, there's natural consequences. That's true. But I think sometimes our life could be going well. And we can be like, oh, well, God must not have a problem with what I'm doing. No. Like, open up the Bible. Let's look at this. Like, and now, are you hurting somebody? Yeah. Like, and I think that's what we have to realize in all of this message, is that there's no sin that's not hurting somebody.
Yeah.
And we just fool ourselves every step of the way.
Right. There are no victimless sins.
Yeah, you said that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
There just aren't. And the victim, the first victim is you. Because it will impact you. It will separate you from God, and it will separate you from others. That you can take to the bank. You may not notice it. you may not think that your life is changing because of the sin that's in it. You may not see any consequence immediately, but it's there and it's coming, and you can't just get away with it.
Yeah. Well, and that really goes to the underlying attitude of that whole perspective. It doesn't matter what I do, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. You could phrase that another way. I can do what I want to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. And when you phrase it that way, you have cut God completely out of that picture. God is no longer in the picture. There is no God. There is no rule. There is no standard. There is no authority. When you say, other than yourself, when you say, I can do what I want to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, that perspective changes everything. And so for us who have some sense that there is a God that created this world, and that he just quite honestly must have revealed himself through the words of Scripture and through Jesus, we don't have the right to have that attitude. Like the Bible just doesn't give us the right to say, I can do whatever I want to do. It doesn't matter that we live in America. It doesn't matter that we live in Ohio. It doesn't matter that, you know, nothing matters. You know, you can have all the money in the world. You still don't get to do whatever you want to do, because God hasn't set it up that way. And when we try to lay claim to that, we put ourselves in God's seat.
Yeah, and then the silence across the crowd. Yeah, you're exactly right. Mm-hmm. And so I think again, this comes back to, you know, what you guys talked about before. It's that openness to what God's doing, confession of my sins. I think it's taking part of the 12 steps, right? It's taking an honest inventory of your life.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you need to face your sinfulness and not hide behind your good works, your good deeds, the good things in your life, and go, okay, God, here I am as a mess. Search my heart and do what you will with me, and face that.
A few years ago at GNG, we read a book. I think it was called Soul Revolution, I believe. Mm-hmm. And part of that, the author encouraged each reader to do the step, you know, the 12 step thing of a fearless and searching moral inventory, right? And I remember, like, and pick a friend or two max to do this fearless and searching moral inventory with, and I'll tell you what, that was awful. It was an awful mm-hmm. process, because I wrote mine. I just did it in a Word document. I sat at home hours, literally took hours. You know, you don't realize how much you suck until you start to inventory it, right? You know, and so, like, I mean, it just took hours. And I remember sitting down and reading it to my friend. You know, and at the end of it, it was just like, it's exhausting. It's truly exhausting to think deeply about all the areas of life in which you are potentially or actively engaged in sin. You know, and yet there's a great freedom in it. I remember because I sat down at his house and we went downstairs, you know, into kind of a basement area, sat down on the couch, and we just kind of talked it out. And man, that was, like I said, it was exhausting, but it was very freeing, because you kind of walk out feeling like, you know, hey, I'm known. Like, there's a reality here. These are all the areas of my life where I'm not doing well. These are the areas of my life where I'm really failing and really flawed and really weak. But you leave feeling it kind of paradoxically stronger, because now not only are you known, not only are you accountable for your behavior, but there's a sense of support. There's somebody who gets what I'm doing and why I'm doing it and why I'm challenged the way I'm challenged. And so to some degree or another, that you feel both God's wrath right, for your sin, because you're having to confess it to a person and it's awkward to say out loud the things you've done wrong, right? And yet, at the same time, there's this sense of peace that comes with it. And it reminds me of a verse that I actually read just this morning. It's out of Psalm 76. This is just my daily, you know, psalm for the day. And I was reading it, and it said this. Psalm 76, verse 10. Surely your wrath against men brings you praise. Right? So in other words, when we feel the weight and we feel the punishment for our sin, somehow that brings praise to God. And I can think about that in a couple of ways. Like, you know, for me as a sinner, when I feel the wrath of God, and I feel the punishment for the sins that I've committed, there's this kind of also a sense of his grace, because, hey, I haven't died yet, right? I could have, you know, I could have been like Ananias and Sapphira on any one of these days, and yet I wasn't. But then the second part of it goes like this: and the survivors of your wrath are restrained. The survivors of your wrath are restrained. In other words, when you sin and when you confess that to God and you live to tell about it, then by that very act, you are restrained. In other words, you are called to live differently, and you are called to pull back on the reins of your sin and hold yourself back from going that direction again, because you have sensed the wrath of God. You've felt the sting of consequences for your actions, and yet it calls you to step back from that and go, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to restrain myself, or I'm going to be restrained by God's grace from continuing down that road. And there are some areas of my life where, thank God, I really improved a lot, because of the fact that I did that moral and search, or fearless and searching moral inventory, right? I looked at myself for real and I dealt with it. And there are some areas of my life where I've truly been much more restrained since that I wasn't restrained in before. And that's an act of God's grace, and it brings him praise.
Yeah. Well, hey, we are out of time, and so we hope that this has been helpful for you. And so we just want to encourage you to get in community, to be open with somebody you can trust, be open to what the Spirit's doing in your life, and to not be afraid. There's grace on the other side of that sin, and you just have to deal with it, but you don't have to do it alone. Christ is there every step of the way with you. And so we hope that this has been helpful for you. We would love to hear your comments, criticisms, whatever it is, your pushback at the yeah buts, as we call them. And you can email us at info@goodnewsgathering.org. And until next week, we'll see you later.
Take care, guys.
Have a great week.